Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Manton, an exposition with notes upon the Epistle James. And we're on verse 3 for this time. And so we'll go ahead and start. So verse 3, knowing this, that the trial of your faith worketh patience. Here is the first argument to press them to joy in afflictions, taken partly from the nature, partly from the effect of them. The nature of them, they are a trial of faith. The effect or fruit of them, they beget or work patience. Let us examine the words a little bit. Knowing, it either implies that they ought to know, as Paul says elsewhere in 1 Thessalonians 4:13, I would not have you ignorant, brethren, concerning them that are asleep in the Lord, etc. So some suppose James speaks of exhorting. Knowing, that is, I would have you know. Or else it is a report. Knowing, that is, you do know, being taught by the Spirit and experience. Or rather, lastly, it is a direction in which the apostle acquaints them with the way how the Spirit settles a joy in their hearts or in the hearts of persecuted Christians by a lively knowledge or spiritual discourse, by acting their thoughts upon the nature and quality of their troubles. And so knowing is distinctly considering. That the trial of your faith. Here is a new word used for afflictions. Before it was temptations, which is more general. Here it is trial, which notes such a trial as tends to approbation. But here arises a doubt because of the seeming contradiction between Paul and James. Paul says in Romans 5, verse 4, that patience works trial or experience. It's the Greek word. He's bringing up Greek words as we go. And James seems to invert the order, saying that trial or experience works patience. But I answer, number one, there is a difference between the words. With Paul, it is some Greek word, and here it's a different Greek word. And so fitly rendered there in Paul's experience and here, trial. And number two, there, Paul speaks of the effect of suffering, an experience of God's help, and the comforts of his Spirit, which work patience. And here, of the suffering itself, which from its use and ordination to believers, he calls trial, because by it our faith and other graces are approved and tried. Of your faith, that is either of your constancy in the profession of the faith, or else of the faith of grace, which is the chief thing exercised and approved in affliction. Worketh patience. The original word, Greek word, perfects patience. But this is a new paradox. How affliction or trial, which is the cause of all murmuring or impatience, should work patience. I answer, number one, some expound the proposition of a natural patience, which indeed is caused by the mere affliction. When we are used to them, they are less grievous. Passions being blunted by continual exercise, grief becomes a delight. But I suppose this is not in the aim of the apostle. This is a stupidity, or like being in a stupor, and not actual patience. Number two, then I suppose the meaning is that our trials minister matter and occasion for patience. Number three, God's blessing must not be excluded. It must be there. The work of the efficient is often given to the material cause, and trial is said to do that which God does himself. By trial, he sanctifies afflictions to us, and then they are a means to beget patience. Number four, we must not forget the distinction between punishment and trial. The fruit of punishment is despair and murmuring, but of trial, patience and sweet submission. To the wicked, every condition is a snare. They are corrupted by prosperity and dejected by adversity. But to the godly, every estate is a blessing. Their prosperity works thanksgiving, their adversity, patience. Pharaoh and Joram grew the more mad for their afflictions, but the people of God the more patient. The same fire that purges the corn bruises the stalk or reed, and in that fire in which the chaff is burnt, gold sparkles. So true is it that the psalmist, in Psalm 11, verse 5, the Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. Well, then, the sum of all this is that afflictions serve to examine and prove our faith, and by the blessing of God, to bring forth the fruit of patience, as the quiet fruit of righteousness is ascribed to the rod, Hebrews 12, verse 11, which is indeed the proper work of the Spirit. He says, the chastening yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness to them that are exercised thereby. As our apostle says, the trial worketh patience. The notes are these. Observation 1. From the knowing, ignorance is the cause of sorrow. When we do not rightly discern of evils, we grieve for them. Our strength, as men, lies in reason, as Christians, in spiritual discourse. Paul was instructed in Philippians 4:11, and that made him walk with such an equal mind in unequal conditions. Solomon says in Proverbs 24:5, a wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increaseth strength. And he says afterwards in verse 10, if thou faintest in affliction, thy strength is but small. That is, you have but little prudence or knowledge. There lies the weakness of our spirits. Children are scared with every trifle. Did we know what God is and whereto his dealings tend, we should not faint. Well, then labor for a right discerning. To help you, consider number one, general knowledge will not serve the turn. The heathens had excellent notions concerning God in the general, Romans 1:19, but they were vain in their imaginations, verse 21. In their practical inferences, when they were to bring down their knowledge to particular cases and experiences, they had a great deal of knowledge in general truths, but no prudence to apply them to particular exigences and cases. Many can discourse well in the general, as Seneca, when he had the rich gardens, could persuade to patience, but fainted when himself came to suffer. He was a heathen philosopher, Seneca. So Eliphaz charges it upon Job that he was able to instruct and strengthen others, but now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest, it toucheth thee, and thou art troubled, Job 4, verse 45. Therefore, it must not only be a knowledge, but a prudence to make application of general truths, that in particular cases, we may not be disturbed and discomposed. Number two, our knowledge must be drawn out in actual thoughts and spiritual discourse. This brings in seasonable succor and relief to the soul, and therein lies our strength. Observe it, and you shall always find that the Spirit works by seasonable thoughts. Christ had taught the apostles a great many comforts, and then he promises in John 14, verse 26, the Comforter shall come, and he shall bring all things to your remembrance, which I shall say to you. That is the proper office of the Comforter, to come in with powerful and seasonable thoughts to the relief of the soul. The apostle ascribes their fainting to forgetting the consolation, Hebrews 12, verse 5. Nay, observe it generally throughout the word. Our strength in duties or afflictions is made to lie in our distinct and actual thoughts. Would we mortify corruptions? It is done by a present acting of the thoughts or by spiritual discourse. Therefore, the apostle says, Romans 6, verse 6, knowing this, that our old man is crucified with him, so would we bear afflictions cheerfully. See Hebrews 10:34, ye took it joyfully, knowing that you have a better and more enduring substance. And Romans 5, verse 3, knowing that tribulation worketh experience. And so in many other places of Scripture, we find that the Spirit helps us by awakening and stirring up proper thoughts and discourses in the mind. Number three, those thoughts which usually beget patience are such as these. First, that evils do not come by chance, or that mere fury of instruments, or by the means from which they come, it's not just the anger of somebody, but from God, or the anger of Satan himself. These are not by chance. These are by the ordination of God. So holy Job says, "The arrows of the Almighty are with me, within me." Job 6, verse 4. Mark, "The arrows of the Almighty." Though Satan had a great hand in them, as you may see in Job 2, verse 7, God's arrows, though shot out of Satan's bow. And then second, that where we see anything of God, we owe nothing but reverence and submission. For he is too strong to be resisted, too just to be questioned, and too good to be suspected. But more of this in the fifth chapter. Observation two. From that, the Greek word, the trial, the use and ordination of persecution to the people of God is trial. God makes use of the worst instruments as fine gold is cast into the fire, the more devouring element. Innocency is best tried by iniquity. But why does God try us? Not for his own sake, for he is omniscient, but either, number one, for our sakes, that we may know ourselves. In trials, we discern the sincerity of grace and the weakness and liveliness of it, and so are less strangers to our own hearts. Sincerity is discovered. A gilded potsherd may shine till it comes to scouring. In trying times, God heats the furnace so hot that dross is quite wasted or removed. Every interest is crossed, and then hirelings become changelings. Therefore, that we may know our sincerity, God uses severe ways of trial. Sometimes we discover our own weakness, Matthew 13. We find that faith weak in danger, which we thought to be strong out of danger, as the blade in the stony ground was green and made a fair show till the height of summer. Peter thought his faith impregnable. So Peter thought his faith impregnable till the sad trial in the high priest's hall, Matthew 26:69. In pinching weather, weak persons feel the aches and bruises of their joints. Sometimes we discern the liveliness of grace. Besides weakness, we might actually find liveliness of grace. Stars shine in the night that lie hid in the day. It is said in Revelation 13:10, "Here is the patience and faith of the saints," that is, the time when these graces are exercised and discovered in their height and glory. Spices are most fragrant when burnt and bruised, so having graces their chiefest fragrancy in hard times. The pillar that conducted the Israelites appeared as a cloud by day, but as fire by night. The excellency of faith is beclouded till it be put upon a thorough trial. Thus for ourselves, that we may know either the sincerity or the weakness or the liveliness of the grace that is wrought in us. Number two, so it was for our sakes, that we may know ourselves, or number two, for the world's sake. And so first, for the present, to convince them by our constancy, being constant, that they may be confirmed in the faith, if weak and staggering, or converted, if altogether uncalled. It was a notable saying of Luther, "The church converts the world by blood and prayer." We are proved, and religion is proved, when we are called to sufferings. Paul's bonds made for the furtherance of the gospel, Philippians 1, 12 and 13, "Many of the brethren waxed confident in my bonds and are much more bold to speak the word without fear." In prosperous times, religion is usually stained with the scandals of those that profess it. And then God brings on great trials to honor and clear the renown of it again to the world, the renown, the actual religious people. and usually these prevail. Justin Martyr was converted by the constancy of the Christians. Nay, he himself confessed it. When he saw the Christians so willingly choose death, he reasoned thus within himself, surely these men must be honest, and there is somewhat eminent in their principles. So I remember the author of the Council of Trent says concerning Anne de Berg, a senator of Paris who was burnt for Protestantism, that the death and constancy of a man so conspicuous did make many curious to know what religion that was for which he had courageously endured punishments, and so the number was much increased. Second, we are tried with respect to the day of judgment. 1 Peter 1:7, that the trial of your faith may be found to praise and honor in the day of Christ's appearing. God will justify faith before all the world, and the crown of patience is set upon a believer's head in that solemn day of Christ. So you see the reasons why God tries. Here's a use. Well then, it teaches us to bear afflictions with constancy and patience. God tries us by these things. For your comfort, consider four things. One, God's aim in your afflictions is not destruction, but trial, as gold is put into the furnace to be fined, not consumed or refined. Wicked men's misery is an evil and only evil, Ezekiel 7, verse 5. In their cup there is no mixture, and their plagues are not to fan, but to destroy. But to godly men, miseries have another property and habitude. Daniel 11, 35, they shall fall to try and to purge and to make white, that is, in times of many persecutions, as was that of Antiochus, the figure of Antichrist. Number two, the time of trial is appointed. Daniel 11, 35, again, they shall fall to try and to purge and to make white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. You are not in the furnace by chance or at the will of your enemies. The time is appointed, set by God. Number three, God sits by the furnace, prying and looking after his metal. Malachi 3:3, he shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. It notes his constant and assiduous care that the fire be not too hot, that nothing be split or lost. It is a notable expression, that of Isaiah 48:9-10, for my praise will I refrain, I have refined thee, but not as silver, that is, not so thoroughly. Silver or gold is kept in the fire till the dross be wholly wrought out of it, completely. If we should be fined as silver, when should we come out of the furnace? Therefore, God says he will choose us in the furnace, though much dross still remain. Number four, consider this trial is not only to approve, but to improve. We are tried as gold, refined when tried. So Peter, 1 Peter 1:7, that the trial of your faith being much more precious than gold that perisheth. Or more clearly in Job 23, verse 10, when he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. The drossy or scorious part of the matter of the gold is severed, and the corruptions that cleave close to us are purged and eaten out. Observation three, from that, your faith. The chief grace which is tried in persecution is faith. So in 1 Peter 1, 7, that the trial of your faith being more precious, etc. Of all graces, Satan has a spite at faith, and of all graces, God delights that the perfections of it should be discovered. Faith is tried partly because it is the radical grace that keeps in the life of a Christian. Habakkuk 2:4, the just shall live by faith. We work by love, but live by faith. Partly because this is the grace most exercised, sometimes in keeping the soul from using ill means and unlawful courses. Isaiah 28:16, he that believeth doth not make haste, that is, to help himself before God's will, or outside of it. It is believing that makes the soul stand to its proof and trial. Hebrews 11:35, by faith those that were tortured would not accept deliverance. that is, which is offered to them upon ill terms of refusing God and his service. Sometimes it is exercised in bringing the soul to live upon gospel comforts in the absence of want of worldly or lack of worldly comforts, and to make a Christian to fetch water out of the rock when there is none in the fountain. Many occasions there are to exercise faith, partly because it is the grace most opugned and assaulted. All other graces march under the conduct of faith, and therefore Satan's cunning is to fight not against small or great, but to make the burnt and weight of his opposition to fall upon this grace. Nay, God himself seems an enemy, and it is faith's work to believe him near when to sense he is gone or withdrawn. Well then, use number one. You that have faith, or pretend to it, must look for trials. Expect them. Graces are not crowned till they are exercised. Never any yet went to heaven without combats and conflicts. Faith must be tried before it be found to praise and honor. It is very notable that wherever God bestows the assurance of his favor, there presently follows some trial. Hebrews 10:32, after ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions. Some are cast upon troubles for religion soon after their first conversion, like these as soon as illuminated. When Christ himself had received a testimony from heaven, presently Satan tempts him. This is my beloved Son. And presently he comes with a, if thou be the Son of God. Matthew 3:17 with Matthew 4 verse 1, Matthew 4 verse 1 and verse 3. After solemn assurance, he would fain make you question your adoption. So see Genesis 23:1, it came to pass that after these things God did tempt Abraham. What things were those? Solemn intercourses between him and God, and express assurance from heaven that the Lord would be his God and the God of his seed. When the castle is victualized, then look for a siege. So I guess when there's food brought into the castle, then look for the besieging of it. Use number two. You that are under trials, look to your faith. Christ knew what was most likely to be assailed, and therefore tells Peter, Luke 22:32, I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not. When faith fails, we faint. Therefore, we should make it our chief work to maintain faith. Chiefly look after two things. Number one, hold fast your assurance in the midst of the saddest trials. In the furnace, call God Father. Zechariah 13:21, I will bring them through the fire, and they shall be refined as silver and gold is tried, and they shall say, the Lord is my God. Let not any hard dealings make you mistake your Father's affection. One special point of faith under the cross is the faith of our adoption. Hebrews 12:5, the exhortation speaketh to you as children, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord. It is the apostle's own note that the afflicted are styled by the name of sons. Christ had a bitter cup, but he says, my Father hath put it into my hands. John 18:11, the cup which my Father hath given me, shall I not drink of it? It is a bitter cup, but he is still my Father. Number two, the next work of faith is to keep your hopes fresh and lively. Believers always counterbalance the temptation with their hopes. There is no grief or loss so great, but faith knows how to despise it in the hope of the reward. Therefore, the apostle describes faith to be, in Hebrews 11:1, the substance of things hoped for, because it gives a reality and present being to the things absent and to come, opposing hope to temptation and making the thing hoped for as really to exist in the heart of the believer as if it were already enjoyed. Well then, let faith put your hopes in one balance when the devil has put the world with the terrors and profits of it in the other. And say as Paul, I reckon or compute that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Romans 8:18. All this is nothing to our hopes. What is this to the glory to come? Observation 4. From that, worketh or perfecteth. Many trials cause patience, that is, by the blessing of God upon them. Habits are strengthened by frequent acts. The more you act grace, the stronger. And often trial puts us upon frequent exercises. The apostle says, chastening yieldeth the quiet fruit of righteousness to them that are exercised thereby. Hebrews 12:11. The fruit of patience is not found after one affliction or two, but after we are exercised and acquainted with them. The yoke, after a while, begins to be well settled, and by much bearing, we learn to bear with quietness, for use perfects. As we see, those parts of the body are most solid that are most in action, and trees often shaken are deeply rooted. Well then, number one, it shows how careful you should be to exercise yourself under every cross. By that means, you come to get habits of grace and patience. Neglect causes decay, and God withdraws his hand from such as are idle, I-D-L-E. In spirituals, as well as temporals, diligence maketh rich, Proverbs 10, verse 4. Number two, it shows that if we murmur or miscarry in any providence, the fault is in our own hearts, not in our condition. Many blame providence and say they cannot do otherwise. Their troubles are so great and sharp. Oh, consider trials, yea, many trials, where sanctified. Work patience. That which you think would cause you to murmur is a means to make you patient. The evil is in the unmortifiedness of your affections, not in the misery of your condition. By the apostle's rule, the greater the trial, the greater the patience, for the trial works patience. There is no condition in the world but gives occasion for the exercise of grace. Observation 5. From that patience, the apostle comforts them with this argument that they should gain patience, as if that would make amends for all the smart of their sufferings. The note is that it is an excellent exchange to part with outward comforts for inward graces. Fiery trials are nothing if you gain patience. Sickness with patience is better than health. Loss with patience is better than gain. If earthly affections were more mortified, we should value inward enjoyments and experiences of God more than we do. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, I will glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Misery and calamities should be welcome because they gave him further experiences of Christ. Certainly, nothing makes afflictions burdensome to us but our own carnal affections. Observation 6. From the same we may observe more particularly that patience is a grace of an excellent use and value. We cannot be Christians without it. We cannot be men without it. Not Christians, for it is not only the ornament, but the conservatory of other graces. How else could we persist in well-doing when we meet with grievous crosses? Therefore, the Apostle Peter bids us, 2 Peter 1, 5, and 6, to add to faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge temperance, and to temperance patience. Where are all the requisites of true godliness? It is grounded in faith, directed by knowledge, defended on the right hand by temperance against the allurements of the world, on the left by patience against the hardships of the world. You see, we cannot be Christians without it, and also not men. Christ says, impatience possess your souls, Luke 21:19. A man is a man and does enjoy himself and his life by patience. Otherwise, we shall but create needless troubles and disquiets to ourselves, and so be, as it were, dispossessed of our own lives and souls, that is, lose the comfort and quiet of them. Amen. All right, that's the end of verse 3. And Lord willing, we will go on to the next verse next time. But until then, go in God's patience, and Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.